everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. I almost said we're like totally back to normal, but we're not, because we didn't have a Monday, which like the best thing about a 3-day weekend is that it's 3 days. The second best thing is that it's a constant reminder to us that all weekends should be 3 days. The third best thing is that the next week is just 4 days. I love it. And the fourth best thing is pretending that it's Monday. And we have a couple ways we're gonna do that. The first is that we are very lucky to be joined on this Tuesday by Francesca Fiorentini. How's it going, Francesca?
What's going on? I thought this was my show now.
I think most people would probably prefer, but as much as I care about what the audience thinks, on this one point I shall not yield. It's mine and I will have it.
Okay.
So you did an amazing job. Thank you so much.
Oh my gosh, it was so fun. And shout out to all the producers, Sophie, Marissa, everyone crushed it. It was really good. Thanks to the Dragon Squad for just holding me and containing me and, like, you know, petting my hair and telling me I'm pretty. I just need that. And also, happy Pride, everybody. It's June.
It is.
We're vaccinated.
We are. Well, some of us, yeah. As I talked about briefly on the pre-show today, you know, Pride festivities have started off not always in the ways you might expect. Like in Florida, they launched us into Pride Month by banning all transgender students from participating in women's sports. So that's one way to tell the country what you're all about. But there are other ways that it will be celebrated. Here at the TYT Network, we have a little tradition where every year we have our LGBTQ Pride special. And that's tonight, by the way. So we're gonna be doing that later on tonight, hosted by the amazing and delightful Jason Carter. I'm gonna be here and we're gonna have Adrian and a bunch of awesome guests who are gonna be joining us. That is tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern time, 5 p.m. Pacific time. So definitely tune in for that. And to sort of launch us into that special, we've got something special for you too. I'm actually wearing it. Oh, the long rumored, finally here, Rainbow Pride Dragon is now available at shoptyt.com. And today only, all of the profits from ShopTYT are gonna go to the Trevor Project. So you can pick up the awesome new shirt, show your pride, and also give a little bit of money to a group that deserves a bunch of pride, the awesome Trevor Project. So that's all waiting for you. And yeah, with that, Francesca, are you ready to do this thing? Someone said, I just saw it. John needs a scepter, Fran needs a crown. I think I like that. I think I like that. Thank you, Twitch. Oh, by the way, whether you're on Twitch or YouTube, thank you everybody for being here. Hopefully you've already hit the like button. That helps for some reason. We all have to live in fear of the algorithm. So please help us fight back by hitting the like button. And with that, one other thing. I know a lot of people are concerned. Sophie, don't give me that look. This is important. I know a lot of people are concerned. Hey, this is Tuesday. We didn't have our Monday. So does that mean no top 10 list? We are gonna do a top 10 list. So filming right after this, Francesca and I are gonna be filming the top 10 things that would be in our riders. We'll see if we have any overlap with Bernie Sanders and his king bed, but we'll be recording that and releasing it later on today for all of our tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube. So you have that to expect. You also have news to expect. And because I want to keep Sophie happy, we're gonna transition right into the news right now. All across the country, Republican legislatures have responded to their inability to win elections by trying to make it so elections don't count for anything. And mostly they've succeeded in states where they control state government. They've been cracking down on mail-in voting, voting hours, all sorts of things like that. But not everywhere have they seen such success, at least not yet. In Texas, they had one of the most bonkers anti-democratic bills. And for now, the Democrats, I'm reading, fought back. That can't be right. We're gonna have to, Sophie, can you fact check that? And won? What? In this economy? No, they kind of did. For now, after a lengthy debate in the State House of Representatives, in which Democrats raised numerous objections, staged lengthy question and answer sessions, and leveraged procedural maneuvers. That's sexiest of terms, leveraging procedural maneuvers. Democrats departed from the chamber leaving it 14 members short of the required 100 member quorum to continue business. Without the requisite number of legislators, the Speaker of the State House adjourned the session around 11 p.m. local time, effectively killing the bill for this legislative session. That flight from the chamber was sparked by State Representative Chris Turner, the party's caucus chair in the House, who sent a text message to members at 10:35 p.m. local time. Members, take your key and leave the chamber discreetly. Do not go to the gallery, leave the building. I feel like I'm getting like a little advanced view of like the next season of Game of Thrones, all the political machinations. So they left, they basically left, and then you can't pass the bill. So why did they have to do all this? Well, the measure would have made mail-in voting more difficult by requiring voters to supply more information, prohibiting local elections officials from sending out absentee ballot applications to anyone who has not requested one, or from working with get out the vote groups that encourage Texans to vote by mail. It would have also prohibited the after hours and drive-through options that voting rights advocates said helped black and Latino voters in the Houston area back in the 2020 election. It would have required all weekday early voting to take place between 6 a.m. and 9 p.m., prohibiting Houston from again offering 24-hour early voting opportunity. And it would have barred early voting on Sundays before 1 p.m., which effectively limits the souls to the polls after church get out the vote efforts that are popular among black churches. And Francesca, there's a lot about this that is nonsense, but you can't vote before 1 p.m. on Sunday seems so hyper-targeted to stop black Christians from organizing immediately after church, that they're the religious party, right? It's us godless atheists who are always cracking down on Christianity and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it is so racist from that angle, you know, knowing that, you know, a lot of the get out the vote efforts in Texas with the black community, yeah, focuses around, you know, going out after church. I mean, they might as well be like, and if you're wearing a hat that is higher than 2 inches, no, sorry, you can't vote, you know, but also, you know, and like all of these voter suppression bills, yes, they disproportionately target people of color for sure, but they also target like white Texans who also go vote after church. You know what I mean? Like that is a thing as well. And they, you know, and Republicans know this, they know that mail-in, like ending or restricting mail-in voting also disproportionately affects older folks who might be more conservative. They don't care. They're like, nah, we can see the thing is, we can get by on minority rule and we like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they've apparently decided that, I mean, every voter suppression effort basically that the Republicans ever pursue will hurt some Republicans, and Republican voters are seemingly okay with that. Either because of ignorance or because they get at the end of the day, them ruling is more important than their party giving a damn about them voting. But they've apparently decided that white conservative Texans vote at predictable levels. It's America, so the levels are still pathetic, but they do vote. Other voters vote at lower levels. There's a little bit more apathy, perhaps because the system does stuff like this to them constantly. And so they need a little bit more activism, effort, get out the vote, that sort of thing. And so, yeah, there's gonna be some white Christians that probably would have benefited from easier voting. There's definitely older people that would have loved having their mail-in ballot sent to them without them having to jump through bureaucratic hoops. But you live in Texas, so screw you. That's basically how your party thinks about you.
Yeah.
But we're gonna go back to how the bill is scary and how it's probably gonna pass. But Francesca, the Democrats stopped it briefly. So what do you say to that?
I mean, it's incredible, right? Like to see them actually working together. There's like, who's the Joe Manchin of the Texas state legislature who's like, no, I don't think so. You know, we gotta restore dignity. Like who, apparently there isn't one, you know? And like, let me go on ABC News to talk about how we need to restore it. Okay, let me go on MSNBC, let me go on CNN. Like no, it is nice to see Democrats working together. And if not for this, then you gotta ask yourself for what. We're talking about a completely anti-democratic measure that is taking us backwards in time when it comes to voting rights. This is the foundation of democracy, voting. And it worked pretty damn well in 2020 in terms of turnout, right? I mean, you can talk about who won, but also talking about the massive turnout, which again, because we're not stupid, we link those two things, and Republicans aren't either. They know that turnout means they're gonna be losing. But it is nice to see there's no Kristen Sinema who's like, you know, I'm gonna curtsy and no to this. So you hope it continues. And also, you gotta look at the when Republicans have walked out of state legislatures, like Oregon, I think their Republican state legislature has walked out like 3 times now. One over, you know, minimal restrictions to firearms, another over COVID safety precautions. They do it all the time. They have like a meeting spot where they go and are just like, you know, we're upholding we're stopping the process here, cause phooey. Yeah. And they do it over terrible things. So it's nice to see Democrats utilizing the tools that Republicans always utilize, but for good.
Yeah. Yeah. And it would be great to see some of those senators that you referenced, I don't know, to be inspired perhaps a little bit like this. Like, you know, they're doing every tactic they can in Texas to hold this off. And like Manchin's like, I bet I can find some Republicans that'll do something bipartisan-y with me. And Kristen Sinema can't even show up for the vote to establish the January 6th commission. Anyway, now that said, the governor of Texas has responded to Democrats walking out and stopping him from getting his bill that would make voting effectively not count for anything in Texas. He tweeted, election integrity and bail reform were emergency items for this legislative session. They still must pass. Now hold on, let's pause for a second there. Election integrity, emergency items. Like Trump won in Texas. Like the Republicans still won. Emergency. It's an emergency. People voted no. And as our producers pointed out, he's gonna call for a special session, which he did not do for Hurricane Harvey, multiple mass shootings, or I don't know, the pandemic. Those not so much emergencies. But some black voters in Houston voting, everybody get to the Capitol stat. That's an emergency. Okay. Legislators will be expected to have worked out the details when they arrive at the Capitol for the special session. I get it. Like if you're having people over, you don't want to be arguing about what food to get like when they get here. You should work it out ahead of time. But like but the thing is, we're joking. It is an emergency to them. Hurricane Harvey happening, that fits with their view of the world. It wrecks some poor people's lives, whatever. Some mass shootings happen, doesn't affect Greg Abbott. He doesn't care about that. People starting to vote, having a little bit easier time to vote, that is actually an emergency for them. There are only two things across the country that seemingly count as emergencies. One is a sort of like, you know, existential threat to their ability to maintain power. The other is their need to keep their base worked up. They are trying to stop people from voting, and they're trying to stop the transgender community from participating in sports. Those are the two emergencies that the Republican Party is currently facing, and that is why their bills are focused on those two things. So Francesca, we were happy to see the Democrats win, but maybe with this special session, it won't last that long.
Yeah, and you know, and they could use help. Democrats could use help from senators, you know, and from on the federal level. And like passing HR1 in the Senate is gonna be huge, right? And getting like protecting voting rights, enshrining them so we don't have, you know, so we don't address voting rights the way we did COVID, which was piecemeal, on, off, wear a mask on, you know, temporary Tuesdays, but not on Wednesdays. Exactly. Like, and then you've got different spreads all over the country. I mean, that's essentially the states' rights origin of this country, which it once again rooted in a lot of racism and rooted in who wanted to keep slavery, etc. So it is sad we have to refight these fights, but this is the Republicans have shown their hand so clear that this is what they're hell bent on, that even we've talked about this before. They don't even say democracy anymore. Democracy is actually kind of a bad word if you're a Republican and you're on the right. You call it a republic. You call America a republic as if those two things are different. They're actually the same thing, but somehow in your mind they're not. And you know, they're sort of floating this new theory that, you know, when all people vote, less people vote. Mm-hmm. And you're like, what? Yeah. More people, less democracy. You're like, huh? Mm-hmm. Anyway, keep on reading old Dr. Seuss and we'll be fine. Like, it's like, you know, gotta go. Like, they don't explain it, but it, you know, we all know that this is what their aim is. So I don't know,
yeah.
John, you think? I'm looking at Beto O'Rourke trying to like make a little bit of a comeback. I'm more of a Joaquin Castro girl myself.
I don't know. I mean,
Joaquin and a Julian together. Tandem.
Together, can two people run together? Like, is Beto gonna jump up onto our democracy and then stand on it and save us? I don't know. Maybe. Look, if he's the candidate, good, I guess. But I don't know. It's just the whole thing is
dog. I love every photo of Beto. His dog is always in the corner. He's got a black lab who's just like, oh. He's like, you're not gonna win. Like, just look at these photos of his dog. Very sad. Very, very like knows very that Beto sad. Might not be the guy, but who knows?
I don't know. And who knows you better than your dog? Anyway, I guess we'll wait and see. I don't know. It's just that the Republican Party has for a very long time understood far better how power works than the Democratic Party does. The Democratic Party does better than you might think. You just have to understand what they use their power towards, and inaction can be a very effective tool. That said, they're getting what they want, and they get that their base doesn't give a damn about democracy. They're not interested in that. They want people who they trust, whether they should trust them or not, to be in charge, to rule. That's what they have. And the Republican Party thinks that either permanently or at least for a while, the other ways that the system is manipulated to allow a small minority to maintain majority control of the bulk of the political power in the country, that is going to slow down reforms. And it's working pretty well for them. And one way to continue that is making it really, really hard to vote, which sure, that affects presidential elections and it affects like choosing your congressman and stuff like that. But it also helps you maintain Republican governorship in Texas. It also helps you maintain a Republican state legislature, I should say. So it's a pretty good strategy. Hopefully the Democrats will continue to take it seriously, but them taking it seriously in Texas is not enough. They have to do it nationally too. And Francesco's talking about HR1, Manchin doesn't even support it. Like, he does not support that. Like, as of right now, it can't pass. So, and that's even if, you know, they were to get rid of the filibuster. So,
I mean, and the other thing that happens, right? Yeah, and the other thing, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like also in a lot of state legislatures, when Democrats pull these things, Republicans are like, okay, cool, we're just gonna rewrite the rules. Like, we don't need.
It's entirely possible they might do that with the legislature. Sure, why not? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why those things about like, oh, Democrats don't make even minor reforms of the filibuster because then Mitch McConnell will do. No, he will do literally whatever he needs to do to get done what he wants to get done. That is what he will do. That is what he has always done. That is what they always do. Like, we talk about like, oh, maybe Beto will win. Okay, if Beto wins the governorship, I can tell you what the next couple chapters of that political story are. The Republican governor is gonna have a lot less power about 2 weeks after that election's done, because that's what they do.
Right.
Republican state legislatures strip all of the power away from all of the state level executive branch offices. The Democrats win. They've done it in multiple states already. They're gonna continue to do that. Whatever power they have will be used to maintain whatever power they need to hold on to. That's what it's gonna be. And by the way, like, legislatures are one thing. The Supreme Court's a pretty big one. You know, and we're like hoping like maybe they can pass voting reform at the national level. Okay, good. And hopefully it will last with a conservative supermajority in the Supreme Court that understands the political calculations. We'll
see.
John, we'll see.
You sound like you studied poli sci. So I have a question. No, but in terms of a state's constitution, can you make an amendment, or like how important are our state's constitutions? Do we have them? Are they like whatevs? They're there. Are they like replicas? And they're like California's version. Do you know what I mean? Like, can we add? Is there an amendment you can say you can't rewrite the rules? You know, to like strip authority from the incoming governor.
I mean, you could potentially. Well, first of all, you'd have to see the individual state you're talking about, because every state constitution is different. You could, in theory, I guess, have some sort of general guidelines of what the legislatures can do. I don't know. I don't know, honestly.
Yeah.
It would depend on the individual states. I'm not sure.
Okay. That's okay.
I'll and good luck passing a constitutional amendment in the states where they control the state government enough to the point where they could strip a governor of his power. or strip, you know, like in Georgia, like strip, you know, the incoming secretaries of state and the, you know, the board that controls the election, strip them of their power and hand it over to some partisan group. It's not just the governor. Pictures. We have Ken Klippenstein B-roll. I'm shocked to find out do we have him in
no,
a sweater?
No. We want prom photos. We want old headshots.
No, I want Ken with like the lasers background behind him. That's what I want. Anyway, that's Ken Klippenstein. And Ken Klippenstein, he is a fan of tradition. And on Memorial Day, he has a tradition. And every year, he strikes again. Back in 2019. He tricked former Representative Steve King into wishing a happy Independence Day to his uncle, fictional Marine Colonel Nathan Jessup from A Few Good Men. That's a classic. And then for good measure, changed his Twitter name to Steve King is a white supremacist, so that phrase would show up on the congressman's page. In 2020, he fooled former acting director of national intelligence, Richard Grenell, into bidding a happy Veterans Day to his grandpa, Bill Calley, the war criminal behind the My Lai massacre. Well, what about this year? What is he gonna do? Well, there's been a theme to the people he's gotten them to retweet, and he was quite successful. For instance, Matt Gaetz responded to Ken Klippenstein. Oh, sorry, his name on Twitter is Matt Gaetz is a pedo, who had a tweet that said, "Congressman, my grandpa's a big fan of yours and is a veteran. He would be thrilled if you could retweet this photo of him for Memorial Day. Here he is, young private first class." And that, if you don't recognize the face, is Lee Harvey Oswald, the man who assassinated John F. Kennedy, also former Marine. That is in fact his military portrait. And Matt Gaetz did retweet it with an American flag and the phrase Matt Gaetz is a pedo showing up on his timeline, which he would rapidly delete after that. Matt Schlapp also retweeted, says it's my honor to retweet the photo of a veteran on a day we remember his fallen friends, which is just too much. His fallen friends. Oh my
and
God.
And enemies. You got schlapped.
You got schlapped. And so look, there's multiple layers to this that we're gonna turn to, but I don't know. Like, it's a little thing. It's a little bit of trolling. But to me, it just really like solidifies they don't actually care about this. Like it's just performative. Like, yeah, as a veteran, I want to pretend that I care about veterans or whatever. I'll leave them to die in the Middle East or whatever. I don't care if they die by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. But on this day, you send me a picture of a guy with a camo hat on, I'm going to retweet it for you. That is the Matt Gaetz guarantee.
It's more than that, though, because there's a caveat. And the caveat, and you always have to say this, is he is a big fan of yours. Like, seriously, just the most. Like fragile, egocentric people, right? They just, and if you say anything, you're like, so anyway, I'm a huge fan. And after I got done murdering five people, I just like took to your Facebook page and I just liked everything because I love everything you post. And they'll be like, oh my God, freedom. You know, like that is the level. They're like, look, I'm a stand-up comic. I know what it is to want applause, to want just like random congratulations. If someone says like, I'm a big fan, you're like, I'm listening. What? You want me to endorse, you know, like what? Granola? Like, I don't know, like whatever. Like, you know, but even me. So to me, it's that. It's the sycophantry, right? You can get anything if you're just a sycophant with these guys. With Trump, it was one.
Tarkin, doesn't matter.
Look, Trump is a white supremacist, so let's all remember that. But also, he didn't in part denounce David Duke, and he doesn't denounce QAnon because he's like, well, they're my fans.
Yeah.
And I don't denounce fans, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're like, no, man, obviously you should. The other part of this is, I didn't know this was Lee Harvey Oswald, okay? I don't honestly have a photographic memory of him in my brain. Maybe that's on me. I would have definitely checked had it been me. But also, I'm not a congressperson. Like I do, I'm not first in my American history class, you know what I'm saying? But you would imagine that maybe Congress people and people who proclaim to love America and defend it from terrorists and blah, 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 you'd think maybe they would have known.
Sure. And look, maybe that's expecting too much. Maybe you couldn't recognize him from that photo. But you know who you should recognize on Twitter? Ken Klippenstein. The dude has not logged off in 7 years and you don't recognize. This is his thing, you fools. He's gonna get you. He's gonna get you. As I'm blanking on the name now, despite having watched Breaking Bad recently, as he said, he can't keep getting away with it. Ken does keep getting away with it. Now that said, while it might be a bit too much to expect for them to recognize the picture, I don't know, like once you know what is going on, I think we could have a bit higher expectations. And yet, Ken Klippenstein, in addition to getting a number of high profile Republicans to retweet an image of Lee Harvey Oswald, also caused Candace Owens to self-destruct because she saw it. She retweeted Ken retweeting, that's weird to Lee Harvey Oswald trending. And said, you are making a mockery of a day that is meant to memorialize men that died so that you and other anti-American leftists can laugh at their sacrifices by photoshopping a murderer into their uniforms. You are deranged, as is any person applauding your efforts. Well, first off, bit of a fact check. He didn't photoshop anybody. Lee Harvey Oswald was a Marine. He was actually a soldier. This is gonna blow your mind, Candace, but there have been soldiers who've killed people. And sometimes it's not the people that socially we've said it's cool for them to kill. Sometimes they come back and they shoot up people here. That happens actually. So her history again, like they didn't recognize the picture, Francesca, but she knew exactly who he was talking about and either didn't know or seeks to pretend that no soldier has ever been willing to do something insane. Now that said, here is the new angle. And it's the political correctness angle. He responds, would not have guessed you cared so much about being politically correct. And she said, it is not political correctness to have a soul and a modicum of decency. Well, hold on, let's pause there. That seems like exactly what the stereotypical invocation of political correctness is about.
Yes.
Is about decency or whatever. So do you desire it or do you not? Because he is not. Like it's one thing maybe if you're expressing an honestly held belief that someone finds abhorrent. Ken definitely doesn't actually love Lee Harvey Oswald. This is a joke. You cannot like the joke or like it. You can laugh or you cannot laugh, but he's definitely joking. And I'm not the one who made our national conversation about political correctness and cancel culture like 80% about what comedians can do.
Yep.
They did that.
Yep.
Every single right-wing comedian has a special called Triggered or whatever at this point. So can you joke about stuff that's politically incorrect or can you not? Francesca, you're a comedian. Answer for them.
Oh my God, I'm not gonna answer for like boomer comics who are fading from glory, who aren't smart or creative enough to write better material. Their jokes are aging. But this is, you're exactly right when you talk about, yeah, political correctness is just having a certain amount of decorum. It's just not, it's actually trying to respect people a little bit. You know, whether or not it's what pronoun they prefer to be used, whether it's, you know, understanding like their histories and legacies of racial oppression. I don't know, it's the same thing as someone's family member dies, having a little bit of respect and like, saying you're sorry and you know, how's it going? Like literally, but when it comes to the troops, when and the right, it is blind allegiance and loyalty. They can do no wrong and they are 150% perfect because our American military is perfect. Everything we've ever done, the My Lai massacre in Vietnam, untold civilian deaths, no, that is perfectly fine. You know, and that is what the left and progressives, what we call BS on. We call BS on having a military that is beyond critique and soldiers themselves. call BS on that. Why? Because that culture of we can never critique the military puts them in danger, because it promotes idiots and a-holes who shouldn't be there, who are sending them into danger strategically, as well as it promotes rapists and assaulters inside the military when someone is being abused and abusing others, you know, and on bases in so many instances. And finally, you know, Ken's joke was that exactly that. It was a joke and it's funny. But man, there is a tinge of sorrow to that, because you realize, you know, this is whatever 50 years ago when JFK is assassinated, and that was a Marine, and yet we still have untold numbers of servicemen and women coming back, extreme PTSD, people who've been radicalized by the military, who've been even more sort of convinced of some sort of, like, you know, grand conspiracy or terrorism is everywhere, Sharia law. You look at the number of servicemen, former servicemen and women who were storming the Capitol on January 6th. Yep. The military has a problem, and police officers, and we know this. And so once again, it's not unpatriotic to say we can do better, and it's not unpatriotic to criticize wars we should have never been in the first place. And my God, veterans have been leading the way on this for so long. And get the F out of here. You do not care about veterans, because you don't take care of them, and you step over them if they ever would ask you for money in the streets.
Exactly. No, and look, his joke bothers them infinitely more than actual, whether it's an honest belief, it is presented as an honest belief about the military from people like Tucker Carlson, who did segments mocking the fact that you would have a pregnant woman serving in the military. That makes a mockery of the military. That was not presented as a joke. I don't know that he believes it, because that means that he actually thinks about politics and then expresses the thoughts. I don't think he puts that much into it, but he said it on his news show when Ted Cruz is like, oh, they're doing ads for the military where, like, they talk about diversity and stuff. That's feminization of the military. That's not a joke. He's actually saying having people like this serving in our military makes us weaker. So where's Candace Owens' anger about that? No, it's the joke that does it. Candace Owens, who would have you believe that, like, if you were to burrow into her chest, you'd just find a beating heart love for free speech. No, she likes, in the same way that literally everyone does, some speech and not other speech. Now, that is true, but it's not good for branding. And so they've come up with things like political correctness and cancel culture, which means that they get to say they're for all speech when not being for it. And anything the left has a problem with is fundamentally some sort of problem of them canceling stuff and being censorious or whatever. Now, Ken pointed that out to her, saying, I for one believe in free speech. Of course, at that point, she had either deleted her tweets or had blocked him. She did later actually block him, despite, by the way, she brought herself into this by quote retweeting him. He didn't target her.
Oh yeah.
He pointed out, funny how elastic the concept of political correctness is, to her comment. And so I will just reiterate, you can do one of a couple of different things. You can have an actual standard about political speech and stick to it. That's almost purely a hypothetical, because nobody basically has that. Or you can do what I have, is have no standard, but not pretend to. What she does, and what virtually everyone on the right does, is pretend to have a standard that you never actually have to stick to. What I would say is, let's do what actually occurs in reality, that the conversations about political correctness and cancel culture seek to obscure, which is everybody gets to say and do stuff, and you get to respond to it. If you like it, clap or subscribe or whatever. If you don't, ignore the person or speak out against it.
Right.
That is the only way any of this can work. But they pretend that they have found something better, more pure, loftier, superior in some way. No, it's what it is. Listen to something somebody says, and if you don't like it, ignore it or speak out against it. If they're selling a product and you don't like it, don't buy it. Or maybe say other people shouldn't buy it. That's the only way any of this can actually work in practice.
It's the rules apply to you and not to me. It's okay when I do it. I did an entire video on Newsbroke about Trump's "it's okay when I do it." Literally, like, you don't have to talk about political correctness or cancel culture. It's just, it's okay when I do it, right? So if Ilhan Omar says something that someone might interpret as anti-Semitic, Meghan McCain goes crazy. Oh my God, Marjorie Taylor Greene says something. You know, she's crazy. It doesn't matter what she says. She's not relevant. Why would she apologize? That's not anti-Semitic, right? It's the same stand. Feminism, oh my God. Oh, women shouldn't be victims. Why are you allowing yourself to be victimized? You know, all these pussy-headed feminists, they're just victims. And then if you say anything about Sarah Huckabee Sanders, you make a joke about her eye makeup. Oh my God, she's a woman in a high place. And like, it's just okay when I do it, when they do it. And we see this time and time again. The jokes, exactly. I'm not even sure Candace Owens understood the joke. You went over that. It's not a photoshopped image. But even if she did, it's like she just said, it's not okay to joke about veterans. Oh, you're the one who's saying literally comics are being canceled because they can't joke about trans people or black people or homeless people or all the other people who generally don't wield power in the society, right? But when it comes to veterans who we false claim to love, no, then there's a line crossed.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. Ken Klippenstein, good job. And I, you know, he's gonna come for me someday. I know the wheel spins, and someday you will be the target of this Twitter assassin. So I've had a good run. We'll see what happens when he finally comes for me. Anyway,
but he's the Sacha Baron Cohen of Twitter. Like, if you get duped by Ken Klippenstein at this point, you're an idiot. Like, haven't you seen Ali G and haven't you seen Borat? Like, you at this point, you know?
Yeah. And he just like all any of them would ever have to do is click on his profile, because he sends the same message to 10 people. You'd see it. Like, they don't do the minimum work. It would be like you look down, you see a red dot on your chest. You don't even dodge. That's all I'm asking. Just dodge. If you get shot at that point, it's probably on you. General Michael Flynn, formerly of the White House, formerly general, had some thoughts about how the American government can be put right from his perspective. Here he is just this last Sunday in Dallas.
I'm a simple Marine. I want to know why what happened in Myanmar can't happen here.
No reason. I mean, it should happen. No reason. But that's right. One more.
Okay. So, Myanmar, Francesca, the situation in Myanmar, that definitely is, I mean, that's a tense subject. Talk about this country. Look, that he totally knows a lot about.
John, don't minimize the situation in Myanmar, okay?
I've done a Myanmar amount of research into this, and I can confidently say, anyway, so that wasn't Flynn with the Myanmar, but he did say that the coup that took down their democratically elected government should and could happen here. And he is, I don't know if it needs to be said, it's in his title, a former general of our military, a steadfast supporter of Donald Trump, who tried to stay in office despite losing an election. I don't believe that he holds any influence over the military or anything, but it seems significant that a former general is going around to Q conventions and things like that and calling for the overthrow of our democratically elected government.
Yeah, this is where he gets a lot of his cred from the QAnon crazies, is because he was a general. Yeah, he had to register as a foreign agent, and you know, he was working on behalf of the Ukrainian government and in part the Russian government. He was basically like a mercenary for the, you know, whoever would give him the most amount of money. That doesn't matter. No. Patriot, not a Russian patriot, no, American patriot. And yeah, I mean, Myanmar, what happened is Aung San Suu Kyi is, I believe, still under house arrest right now. Mm-hmm. The military took over. And like, the military, who she arguably let slide for way too long when it came to atrocities against a minority Muslim community there. But and yeah, so it's scary stuff. I mean, this is QAnon folks, and Flynn has been participating in this, and you know, even Mike Lindell from MyPillow have been participating in the idea of like, hey, what if we just take the reins of power? And absolutely, you bet that the lesson a lot of people are drawing from 2020 is they should have, that the military just should have been on board. And then they tried to, and then they tried to on January 6th. let us not forget.
And the only people that have suffered any significant consequences are the, you know, the foot soldiers they sent running into the building. That's it. Like, none of the people who organized it have suffered any consequences. You know, and by directly organized it or called for it effectively. So he's off giving his speeches. Sidney Powell was at, I believe, that event, saying that Donald Trump will be president again, which apparently Trump is also saying that he'll be president by August. You know, it's unfortunate that he doesn't get penalty time for the months Joe Biden stole from him, but he's definitely going to be president again. Rudy Giuliani still exists. Trump, it's just out there. Like, he's facing this criminal investigation, but not for trying to overthrow the US government. And he might run again. He might try to, you know, steal an election again. Like, they tried to do this in a number of different forms, and only the weakest of all of them are suffering any consequences whatsoever. All of the leaders of it are still out there. They've learned some lessons. They haven't repented. They haven't had to apologize for any of this. They're waiting for round two. And we're supposed to just be like, oh, that's cool. Don't worry. We have our great defenders, Joe Biden and Joe Manchin and all that. They'll definitely save democracy.
Absolutely. I know we have a million stories to get to, John. So
yes,
I'm gonna let you just end on that note.
One more note.
Stick the landing. Keep going.
The Ken Klippenstein thing, that bothers you because he's mocking the troops, but Flynn saying, oh no, what should happen is our soldiers should turn against the commander in chief, turn against the Constitution, and then turn us into some tin pot dictatorship by overthrowing the government. Is a general saying that about soldiers, not a peep. That's not, you know, a day before Memorial Day. That's not an issue. That's not an insult to the soldiers.
To be fair, that is super American, right? I mean, we love installing tin pot dictators. So it just made sense that we did it in this country.
Yeah.
Potentially with some foreign help, which is just even more on brand.
It's the last, it's cultural appropriation come to democratic overthrow. Anyway, let's turn to some other news. Oh, I love that B-roll already. Over the past few years, we've gotten some good Democrats elected, generally being represented as part of the Justice Democrats, but more appear to be coming, and their odds certainly aren't looking that bad. One, Nina Turner. You might have seen her on the show many, many times. She's running for the seat that was vacated when former Representative Marsha Fudge was tapped by President Joe Biden to serve as the US Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. And they've got this special Democratic primary coming up in not that long. Well, we got a poll. Let's take a look at this. And that is what you want that poll to look like right now, with Nina Turner at 50%. The second place, I mean, other than undecided, I guess, being a candidate Brown at 15%, it falls off rapidly after that point. That is look, I'm obviously a huge fan of Nina Turner. I'm never more hyped for life than in the immediate aftermath of having talked to her on the program, but I didn't dare dream that at this point she'd be at 50%. That seems pretty good.
Absolutely.
What do you think?
I was looking at the poll and I was like, wow, that UND candidate is really surging though. 20% of Mr. UND or Mrs. UND. That's undecided, obviously. I'm an idiot. 50% is amazing, especially at this point, to have that many voting for. I mean, she's gonna crush it, right? Like, unless other Democrats in opposition can coalesce around one person, which you never know. Barack Obama might make a magic call and you know, we'll get a we'll get a Biden-like figure against her. I'd be so mad if he ever did something like that. But look, Nina Turner deserves to be in the House. She, you know, if anyone's ever seen her speak, seen her at a rally, seen her on television where she just slays every single time, courage of her convictions and truly, you know, speaking to, I think, working class and also, you know, Black Americans' needs, you know, and by also prioritizing what consistently, when polled, they discuss, which is in addition to racial justice, healthcare and housing and climate justice, some of the most basic sort of, you know, quality of life things.
Yeah.
So wow, what a gift for Ohio and for this country if this actually happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, if they were to get all of the other candidates and if the UNDS broke for them, and I did check, it is undecided. It's not Frances Underwood, thankfully, broke for her. But I do want you to bear in mind this, it's a poll. Who knows? When we showed you, and probably most of the people watching this probably saw the poll going around on Twitter, but whether you saw it there or you saw it here for the first time, think about how you felt. Pretty good, right? It was nice. The idea that Nina Turner could be Congresswoman Nina Turner. Okay, now think about what if it doesn't happen? Think about how you're gonna feel and understand that a poll is good, but a poll ain't destiny. So there's two objectives to doing this story. The first is, oh, a good feeling. Isn't that rare? Yes, that is nice. The second though is, now make it happen. And like, she's doing well with the volunteers that she's gotten, the donors to her campaign, all of that. But she's going to need more, because while a lot of people are gonna feel great watching this poll, her opponents in the Democratic establishment, they're gonna see this and think, oh, we need to flood money into this race.
Yep.
To try to tear her apart, to try to boost one of her opponents. Maybe we're gonna get some of the others to drop out. So this is, it's not done. She's gonna need help. She's gonna need donors. She's gonna need people to make calls.
Yes.
You know, if it's safe in the area with masks and everything, to go knock on doors. So go check her out. We've had her on the show multiple times during the race. We're gonna have her back on again. Just bear that in mind. Poll's great. It's looking good. It ain't done yet. So just bear that in mind. Ellie Kemper's back in the news. Well, that's great. I loved Ellie Kemper in The Office. I thought the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt was amazing. And now I find out that she's in the news for, oh no, oh God, no. Well, let's take a look at why she's in the news. So as a freshman at Princeton U, she's the new veiled prophet queen, the veiled prophet queen of love and beauty. And that's a picture of her as a youngster. Doesn't quite look 19 there, but we have another photo as well. It's 1999. Elizabeth Clare Kemper, the veiled prophet queen of love and beauty. Now I understand that if you have not been following the controversy over this on Twitter, none of this makes any sense. I followed it and it still doesn't really make any sense, but we did find out that the queen of love and beauty is selected each year from among debutantes who received invitations to this ball, which traditionally excluded non-white attendees. Kemper was a 19-year-old student at Princeton when she was crowned the ball's 105th queen. According to a 2014 article in The Atlantic, the event's organizers emphasized the existing power structure, if you know what I mean, and banned Black and Jewish members, leading many people to say that she had effectively been crowned queen of the Klan in some form back in 1999. Francesca, what is going on?
I don't know. This story was one of those stories that broke yesterday and I looked at my phone and I was like, nope, I'm gonna wait. I am putting phone down. I have no opinion until we suss this one out, you know, because it was so bizarre and you're like, wait a minute. But obviously, yes, it's not the KKK, although not for lack of, you know, coding all of your, you know, membership around white people. Look, debutante balls are a thing, you know, like high society. This is how little I'm like, high society organizations are a thing. I was part of some like sort of country clubby thing for like a summer. And then I was like, I hate this. I hate this a lot. Like, I don't wanna. So it was just, it's like private school kids. And so for me, this story was less about obviously the KKK or the fact that like Ellie Kemper is somehow responsible for this, or that she, you know, owes people an apology. We can talk about that later. And really more about how elitism functions in this country, and how like white, you know, white privilege, white supremacy, if you will, that the power structure generally works out for somebody. So here you have someone who is a freshman at Princeton University. She is in a thing that is called a veiled ball, a veiled prophet queen of love and beauty. Like that's feels like an Eyes Wide Shut red flag right there. But you know, that is some next level thing. And then lo and behold, she becomes a very successful actress who, you know, has a, you know, multiple successful shows, got a lot of money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And like, as someone, you know, sort of scraping by and like would love, you know, a break and stuff, it is, I'm like, maybe I should have stuck with that country club thing that I was doing way back when, because I could have been a veiled queen, John.
She could have been a veiled contender.
Maybe.
Maybe, we'll never know now. You weren't willing to abide by racism.
I'm Chinese, anyway. And they were like, we're just gonna not continue.
Yeah, complicated.
What do you think?
I get the Italian thing, but even that's kind of an edge case. We weren't really that comfortable with that.
Very like, edge.
By the way, she's 19, and that second picture, can we put that up again? Why does she look like she's 12 years old in that picture? Anyway, that is not the problem here. There are several problems, but the main problem is like a lot of people were joking on Twitter. I don't think a lot of people were coming out of it like, screw her, we'll never watch a rerun of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
Sure.
Did she know? I mean, she's 19, she's not 12. That said, I don't know what responsibility she bears. I was gonna call for a poll on Twitch actually, and it's already up. Is she to blame or not to blame? In the absence of more information, I'm leaning towards I don't see how much she is to blame. Although understand, I am biased by the fact that I find her to be a delight in the shows that she's been in. So maybe that's swaying me. I don't know.
Well,
what do you think?
I find her obnoxious. So I find her obnoxious, yeah. And I don't think she's to blame. So it's like both. I think the real question is, does she say anything now about it? She hasn't yet. And I believe she should. She should probably say, look, and especially in the year 2020, 2021, this moment, you can't stay silent. She'd be like, I've had a lot of good things in my life and I've had a lot of privilege. And I wish that, you know, for many actors and struggling actors who have not been so lucky or whatever, who've not been born into this life, essentially. Like, she's not gonna go that far. She might say something about how she doesn't believe that, you know, elite society clubs or whatever. What was this place called again?
It's some white nonsense, to quote Kimmy Schmidt. It's some white nonsense.
White Nonsense Incorporated. that she doesn't believe they should ban like Jews and blacks, which they don't. Like country golf clubs didn't allow Jewish and black members for a long time, until like, we're just gonna quietly say it's okay in like the late 80s or something. Yeah. Or even later.
Bloomberg's club didn't. And it was 22 years ago. Anyway, I do wanna comment on the white nonsense though, because like it's not the case anymore, but for a very long time, people like me were made to feel bad about being into nonsense, nerdy fantasy nonsense. Mm-hmm. And all the while, they're all doing it. They just do it in their own form. So if I care about Frodo's journey to Mordor, I'm a nerd. If you're going to the ball of the veiled queen of love and beauty, oh, that's high society. She could be in my novel, the veiled queen. I'm gonna put a character named the veiled queen of love and beauty, and it's gonna be some nonsense in my book. But in yours, it's high society. If I talk about Legolas shooting the Uruk-hai, I'm a nerd. If you tramp around in Michigan woods with your militia buddies talking about how you're gonna defend your house from bandits, oh, that's serious business all of a sudden. We all like nonsense. I at least know that mine is made up. I know that mine is fantasy. I don't treat it as real. You all do.
Yes, go off, nerd. Go
You're
off.
All nerds. Anyway. Okay, Francesca, I think that's that for that. But we are going to break in a second, but it is only to record our top 10 list for the week. We're going to be doing the top 10 things that would be in our riders if and when we become important enough to have riders. So that's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to be filming that and releasing it later on today for our tier 2 and tier 3 members on YouTube. But until then, Francesca, as always, thank you. Thank you a million times over for taking the reins of the show.
It was so fun. Thank you everyone for sticking around. You know, follow me at Franny Fio on all the things, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, you know. Be a friend. Join the Frantifa. That's what we call the Bituation Room fans. So
awesome. I'm a fantastic super soldier. Anyway, until then, stay safe out there. Stay sane out there. We'll see you soon. So far in 2021, there are basically two sorts of legislation that Republican state legislatures are interested in passing. Efforts to curtail voting after the huge rise in participation in last year's election, and bills designed to reassure their base that they absolutely despise members of the transgender community. And unfortunately, we turn now to Tennessee, the most recent battleground for the latter sort of bill, where we have the governor, Bill Lee, signing multiple pieces of legislation targeting transgender Tennesseans. We're very lucky, by the way, to be joined now to discuss these pieces of legislation. Civil rights and consumer law attorney Cheryl Ring joins us on the Damage Report. Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So we've got a couple pieces of legislation, 1182 and 529. Why don't we start with the first? What is this all about and why is it drawing such a negative reaction?
So Bill 1182 is most noteworthy for creating what a lot of us in the legal community are calling a return to segregation. Only this time it's segregating transgender people. And essentially what businesses have to do if they serve trans people is they have to post a sign in their window or as well as at the bathroom, saying that they allow trans people to use their bathrooms and that they serve trans people. Most importantly, though, this is not language that says we are trans inclusive. This is language that essentially misgenders trans people. And worse than that, it essentially creates this incentive for businesses to not serve trans people so as to avoid putting up the sign. Now, when this was passed, the district attorney for Nashville said that he was not going to enforce it. And in response, the sponsor of the bill pointed out that it is actually a misdemeanor to not comply with the bill. So if you run a business and you refuse to either say, I won't serve trans people, or I won't put up a sign in my window that misgenders trans people, you can actually serve jail time as the owner of a business for failing to do that. And it is thus far, and we've seen some pretty bad bills across the country. Florida is the most recent one. There was a signing ceremony this morning on the first day of Pride. But the Tennessee one is the most noteworthy so far because it is the most egregious. It is essentially an attempt to keep trans people out of the public sphere.
And I know this is all very recent. Has there been enough time yet to see if you hypothesize that it might lead to some businesses choosing to not be inclusive so that they don't have to put up signs like this? Do we know yet if that strategy seems to be working?
At this point, it's too early to tell. The law, in addition to being extremely bigoted, is also extremely poorly written. The only thing that we know is that if you intend to comply with the law, you have to put up a sign that essentially is segregation. Either we don't serve trans people, or we serve, or the wording is analogous to we allow people of the opposite sex to use any bathroom, which is misgendering and humiliating. And it also creates enforcement problems. How is a business going to enforce this? Are they going to have someone standing at the door saying, can I inspect your genitalia? There's really no way of enforcing this in any kind of reasonable way. And it is going to lead to cis people as well being stopped if people are under the mistaken impression that they're trans. And this happens every time we see anti-trans bills. They encompass cis people also. And so the Tennessee legislature does seem to be adamant that there are, that is, this is a misdemeanor, that there will be criminal charges for failing to comply. At this point, there haven't been any yet, so we don't know how that's going to happen. But it is a badly written, very bigoted law, and the consequences of that are going to be far reaching, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And for people like me who are in the trans community, it creates a problem of, if we are going through a state like Tennessee right now, what are our rights? Do we still have the right to travel in Tennessee? Do people who live in Tennessee have the right to use public accommodations at this point? And all of this is up in the air.
And I have to assume that one of the consequences will be some sort of legal challenge to this bill. As you point out, there seem to be issues with the ability for it to be enforced, the vagueness, not to mention, obviously, the fact that it's demonizing a community. I'm assuming these challenges will come. Do you have any predictions for how it might fare in the legal system?
You know, under ordinary circumstances, I would say that a law like this has very little chance of being upheld for a couple of reasons. Number one, there is already, thanks to Bostock, the ruling from a couple of years ago, where Justice Gorsuch actually did rule that gender identity is protected as part of sex for purposes of employment law. And so we, under ordinary circumstances, I would say that it is likely that a law like this would be struck down. However, Justice Gorsuch, in that opinion, did leave several openings, including for religious exemptions and for bathroom bills. And that was something that was not noted at the time very much, but it is true. Justice Gorsuch did say that this ruling does not address bathroom bills. And he was essentially giving an invitation to right-wing legislatures to pass bathroom bills to challenge Bostock in the future. I think it is at best unclear what a federal judiciary, most of which still has about half of all of its judges appointed by Donald Trump, how that is going to react to these kinds of laws. It is possible that this one is a bridge too far, and I'm hoping that the courts look at it that way, but I am not yet optimistic in light of what we've seen so far in courts reacting to these anti-trans bills.
Okay. And so that was 1182. We also have 529. Can you tell us about that?
And so this is the sort of trans kids in sports type thing that a lot of states are passing. And we've seen bills like this everywhere from the Dakotas to Florida to Arkansas. And basically, these bills are of one of two flavors. Number one, they say that if you are a trans child, you are not allowed to compete in scholastic sports. And the other thing it essentially does is it actually criminalizes childhood transition. And these bills do this in a number of ways. The Arkansas one is most notable because it actually made it a felony to provide affirming care to minors. And that was the most egregious one. And it was so egregious that Governor Asa Hutchinson actually vetoed it. And then the legislature overrode his veto. And the Tennessee bill does very much the same thing, that we as the state are going to say that you are not allowed to transition. And if you do transition, it is a crime to affirm you, and you cannot compete in scholastic sports. And the irony is that at the time, for example, the Arkansas bill was passed, there were zero trans children competing in any kind of scholastic sports in the entire state, and there were only 200 trans kids in the entire state. And so in addition to being extremely prejudiced, it's also addressing a problem that doesn't exist. There is no data anywhere that suggests that trans people have an unfair advantage when it comes to competing. It also is, and I feel like this is important, it also is this idea that the only people who are trans are assigned male at birth. There is this idea that it erases trans men. It does not acknowledge non-binary people. It is this idea that only assigned male at birth trans people exist, and that we transition solely for the purpose of excelling in high school or college sports, which is frankly insane.
Yeah, it seems like that's a hypothesis that would sort of demand a little bit of evidence, considering everything else we know about
The experience, the way that society, the states, the United States generally has treated the community, the idea that all of this would be done for some sort of ephemeral, temporary advantage in high school sports seems like if you're going to say something like that, you should probably provide a little bit of evidence, but they haven't required it. As you point out, I think totally rightly, it is addressing a problem that doesn't exist under the guise of a standard that doesn't exist. They're pretending yes. as if they just care so much about the integrity of women's sports. I've never seen any other evidence of that. My like I'm just a guy who talks on the internet, so I can just say my opinion, which is this is entirely based on they want to have a community to attack. They want their base to feel yes. open and free, to feel prejudiced and hateful towards this group. You come from a different world, civil rights, consumer law, all of that. Is there anything else to that? And if it is that something that you fear or feel might work politically?
You know, it's interesting because as an attorney, I view this as an attack on fundamental rights. As a trans woman, I feel this as an attack on my community. And I can tell you that, unfortunately, there is still this idea that we are an other, right? That we are freaks, for lack of a better term. I mean, if you look at the way that people like Marjorie Taylor Greene even former President Trump talked about my community as though there is something wrong with us, as though we are deviants in some way. And there is, and unfortunately, even in the legal community, I get on a fairly regular basis this idea from judges that I am not a trustworthy person because I am trans, because they do not trust me because I am trans. And it is very hard being a trans attorney in that way, because I see that kind of prejudice coming from the attorneys that I'm arguing in front of on behalf of clients. One thing I will say is, if you look at what we're trying to, what they're trying to do, trans contestants have been allowed in the Olympics for decades, and there has yet to be a single trans medalist even. And what's interesting is, and I've spoken about this before, if you look at the reason why trans people are being targeted specifically in sports, it is the same kind of thing that targets, I would say, Caster Semenya or Naomi Osaka. This idea that womanhood needs to be reserved for cis white women, and that if you have any kind of advantage over cis white women, you need to be excluded. And it is why there is so much overlap between transphobia and racism, that you see if you are a talented Black woman, you are excluded from sports, much in the same way that if you are a talented trans person. And yet we never see Michael Phelps being banned, even though they're talking about banning moves that Gabby Douglas or Simone Biles is so good at. And so the reality is that if you are looking at sports and you're saying, well, why is there an unfair advantage? You never talk about that in the context of cis white athletes, and only in the context of Black and trans athletes. And that's really the big problem. If you're looking at what is the crux of this, the crux of this is it's a combination of transphobia and white supremacy.
Yeah. You know, we've talked a lot, especially recently, about this flurry of bills in so many different states, and the disproportionate amount of time that Fox News has spent on these sorts of topics. Is there, and I'm sort of hoping that I'm in a bubble where I'm focusing, as the media generally does, on the negative news. Is there a reaction to this? Like, so we talk about these predominantly red states with their attacks against the transgender community. Are blue states doing something to protect trans people in their states? Is there an effort nationally for some sort of, I don't know, bill, some sort of federal acknowledgement of some sort of civil rights to protect against this? An effort to choose future judges and justices that might have a different view in this world? Is there anything like that that you see?
You know, the Equality Act is something that has been discussed a lot. So long as the filibuster remains intact, it's not going to happen, unfortunately. I know that there have been, the ACLU has been bringing some cases. Chase Strangio has been doing amazing work. He's probably the best trans attorney in the world right now. But at the end of the day, we see a lot of words, and unfortunately, this is true of the Biden administration also. We see a lot of words saying that the administration stands behind us, but not a lot of action to protect us beyond that. There's been no action by the federal government to bring lawsuits against these states. And the sadder part is that these are attacks not just on trans adults, but also trans children. And if you look at trans children, one thing that conservatives throw out a lot is the suicide rate among trans people, as to underscore their idea that this is a mental illness, when in reality it's not. And if you look at post-transition suicide rates in my community, in the trans community, they're actually lower than the general population. The number one leading cause of suicidal ideation in the trans community is transphobia, is the idea that you cannot, that you face transphobia, the lack of an affirming family, the lack of affirming care. That is the cause of suicidal ideation in the trans community. And so when we say that these kinds of laws are going to cost lives, they really are going to cost lives. The problem is, I think, that trans rights has become sort of a fringe issue. And you even see people like James Carville, who are Democratic talking heads, who are like, well, we don't need to focus on that. Aaron Sorkin said that in an interview a couple of years ago. And that does seem, unfortunately, to be the prevailing attitude among much of the Democratic Party. The trans rights are a wedge issue we don't want to get into. And unfortunately, it's my community that has to suffer. The NCAA talked about pulling out of states that passed anti-trans sports legislation. That hasn't happened. And so, unfortunately, as much as I wish I could sit here and say, no, there has been a concerted backlash against this, there really has not been of the kind that's needed to sort of disincentivize these bills from passing. And until and unless that happens, more and more states are going to do this. And what worries me is the number of kids who, having been a trans kid myself, the number of kids who are not going to get what they need and the number of lives that are going to be lost as a result.
Yeah. And I feel like based on the experience of the past couple decades, it's pretty safe to predict that many of these politicians are just going to stay silent, worrying that if they come out and support a fundamental human rights, it might hurt them politically.
Exactly.
As Republicans victimize the community. And then someday, when the politicians catch up to society, they're all going to pretend that they were advocates, that they were on the right side of the issue as they run for president or governor or whatever, unfortunately.
Yes.
Well, obviously, there's a lot of issues here, but we very much appreciate you taking time out to join us. This is not going to be the last of these efforts by the Republicans, so hopefully we'll be able to talk again as these bills and the legal challenges against them continue. But for now, Cheryl Ring, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.